thank you to our sponsors, Digital Magic the Gathering Online Card Specialist, CardHoarder.com, and MTGOTraders.com. And also thank you to our paper magic specialist, GondaPlaid.com, along with Cape Fear Games, a online card store and brick-and-mortar card store. You can find us each week on MTGCast.com, StarCityGames.com, TCGPlayer.com, MyMTGO.com, and MTGSalvation.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. We're here for an actual Monday Night Magic, and I am joined by, I'm going to call him Jack, but his true name is actually a mystery.
Why, hello, everybody. Well, Tom, I mean, that's just me. I strike out from the shadows. I hijack half your show as a co-host.
Yeah.
That's just me.
I imagine you're like blue with like blue fur, and you disappear in a puff of brimstone smoke.
Yeah, and then I go to whatever fifth dimension I like to travel to occasionally.
Yeah, so we are bringing you Monday Night Magic. We, as I had somebody tell us, we are either like the Oprah of Magic or the CNN of Magic. I'm going to take Oprah because I think she's actually worth more money than CNN.
And that works too, because like then it makes it socially acceptable for me to have a pot belly, so I'm good with that.
Yeah, you can gain like 3,000 pounds, lose 3,000 pounds, and just have your weight just fluctuate rapidly.
And nobody will say a thing.
Yeah, get your own magazine. I mean, it's just crazy. She can like have her own country now.
People probably wouldn't like the books I tend to recommend, though, for a club. Like Choke by Chuck Palahniuk. A book where you have a sex addict who thinks he's Jesus seems to not go along with a lot of people for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much only read books where, like, it's action-adventure where you have, like, a scholar who's discovered a secret treasure or secret map, and then they have to race around the world before the world ends.
Oh, so you're a fan of Dirk Pitt, then, probably.
Yeah, I have read every single Clive Cussler book ever printed. We have actually, me and my wife have decided we are going to name our first child actually Dirk.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm not actually
Anyways.
About that.
Really?
Yes.
You and my dad would get along famously, but Tom, this isn't the Oprah of MTG. We are Monday Night Magic. And what does Monday Night Magic do best, Tom?
Well, we're going to talk about some magic news. So we actually have a bunch of new spoilers came out for Rise of the Eldrazi today. We had 6 pooled spoilers. This got sent to a huge slew of different sites. And this is not going to take the place of the exclusive spoilers. This is just a way for Wizards to get kind of a group of cards out that could be released actually today. We received these a few days ago, but we could not discuss them under the threat of, you know, death and being boiled in a pot of oil, is that we couldn't show this card until today, but now we can talk about them. We also have some random little magic tidbits that we haven't cut up. We have a very nice April F&M promo coming up, and we'll also walk through a couple of the big tournaments this past weekend, and I also love it when 8-year-old kids are making it to the second day of a GP, and I think that's worth discussing.
Definitely, especially when, what were they playing now, Tom?
For What's This? Are we talking about GP Kuala Lumpur?
Yeah, the 8-year-old winning.
This was standard.
Oh my goodness, so he's probably playing Jund. Anyways.
Yes, but it's pretty cool. And it was won basically by kind of like a red deck wins deck.
Ooh, awesome.
I always feel like I'm repeating myself when I say a red deck wins deck, but that's technically what it is. But instead of making you guys wait, we're going to jump right into the Rise of the Eldrazi spoilers. And I brought this up where they love keywords now, and there is no lack of keywords this time around. So, for you, Jack, was there any of these cards that kind of really jumped out at you as being kind of more impressive or had an ability that you found was really interesting?
Well, actually, there were two I'd like to talk about. Mnemonic Wall is one of them. It's 4 colorless and a blue for a wall. As Defender, obviously, because it's a wall, and walls are never going to be that badass and amazing.
I love how they make them a creature-type wall, though. That, I think, is classy. That's cool.
I know. It can be, like, artifact wall, or, I mean, it sounds like the wall is just going to randomly burst into show tunes at any given moment, especially with the name Mnemonic. But anyways, when Mnemonic Wall enters the battlefield, you may return target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard to your hand. This, I like cards that do that sort of trait, I guess I should say, kind of like Scrivener and Knuckle V more recently, because if you have any sort of counterspell and or balance, that becomes very abusable very quickly. Another card that I especially like, not because it's very impressive, but because more so of the brand spanking new mechanic that caught my eye, Praise Vengeance. It's a green, it's an instant, it's also an uncommon. Target creature gets +2/+2 till the end of turn. Yawn, absolutely boring. However, it has this attached to it as well. Rebound. If you cast this spell from your hand, exile it as it resolves. At the beginning of your next upkeep, you may cast this card from exile without paying its mana cost. Oh, snap! Now, like, obviously, this isn't really that impressive on its own, but imagine this attached to anything more powerful, once again going back to my bounce reference, and being able to constantly throw things back at your opponent via bounce. That would be great. A lot of people have perhaps suggested an alternative draw method, like two colorless, a blue for an instant that draws you a card and has this attached to it. That's a bit too powerful for my taste, but I do see perhaps a card like that. I mean, Una's Grace really was not that far-fetched, and it was quite good. There will obviously be like a burn card that does like two damage or something like that too, and it just slowly whittles away at them. But Rebound definitely has me excited as a mechanic, and I can't wait to see if they actually spoil this on something really amazing.
Now, what do you think, and this is something I've noticed with Magic, we're having more and more cards where they're a may ability. And with Rebound, when you play this during the next upkeep, it's a may. So this is yet another thing that you have to keep track of on the game board so you don't forget to use its ability.
I honestly think it's there to reward players that are paying attention to the game, if that makes any sense. It's not just a, I know this is going to happen, it's a
preserve the game, like, state sort of thing.
Yeah, it's, you really have to be fully focused on this, and it, mechanics like that reward people who pay attention. Which, so with me, this is absolutely okay, because I'm not going to forget that I have this sort of thing going on. With some people, though, I mean, you know, they might not be totally focused on what they're doing, they might be distracted by texting or listening to MP3 players, stuff like that. So, folks, you're really going to have to focus on game day and when you're drafting with stuff like this. I think it's a nice little way of, once again, giving free CA. It's not quite as redonkulous as Cascade can become, but I like it. All the same, I really do like it. And also, they fixed it to where it won't keep going, make Cascade even worse. Did you catch that?
Because you
play it from your hand.
Oh, so when it gets recast, when it's being recast from the exiled zone, it's not being played from your hand.
Precisely, yeah.
Yes.
You have to originally play it from your hand, which saves it from, you know, making any kind of crazy plays with Jund, or like I said, just basically it keeps it from making card advantage even more ridiculous.
Yeah. That makes sense. If you cascade into one of these, you're only going to get the immediate the one benefit. You don't get the rebound part of this.
Yeah, you're just going to sit there and frown really badly.
But I mean, it is a cool ability. It's one green for a +2/+2. But I think all of us, it tickles that little bit inside of us down way below where you get something for free.
Yeah, the getting something for free, I mean, you know, Storm and Cascade have proven that free things are good. Free things are really, really, really redonkulously good sometimes.
But this is like delayed gratification good.
Yeah, I can agree with that, Tom, but if the delayed gratification slowly builds into you winning the game, wouldn't it be worth it?
Well, yeah, like, when I see the word rebound, I keep thinking, like, rebound relationship. Like, I imagine a car with, like, a big vat of ice cream on it, or a kitten.
My mana cost is so fat, I hate myself. Nom, 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 nom. More Ben and Jerry's.
That's all. I'm sorry, I could not get, when I saw the word rebound, that's all I could think of in my mind.
That makes the title Praise Vengeance absolutely more appropriate.
It is. And I would say the kind of the big gun of the six pooled spoiler cards this week is we have another one of the Eldrazi. So, and this is a creature Eldrazi. There is an artifact is not mentioned anywhere on this card, and I will need to keep reminding myself of this. So we have Pathraiser of Ulamog. 11 colorless mana. I think it's an uncommon, as far as I can tell, from the which is, that's kind of cool. It has to be one of the more expensive uncommons I have ever seen for a casting cost.
Definitely.
That is a Magic Cards at Info thing that I need to figure out. But Pathraiser, he is a creature Eldrazi, uncommon. He's a 9/9. He has the Annihilator 3. We saw this on Kozilek. Whenever this creature attacks, defending player sacrifices 3 permanents. Doesn't have to do damage. He just has to say, hey, I'm attacking you, and then they, you know, grab their pants. And then he also says, Pathraiser of Ulamog can't be blocked except by 3 or more creatures. And has a...
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, so I mean, it's 11 mana, but 9/9, kind of almost, well, basically unblockable most of the time. And it says, no thought but hunger, no strategy but destruction, which I thought was pretty cool flavor text for the space they had. So, Jack, the one last thing I wanted to ask about the Pathraiser of Ulamog before we pass on, and I brought this up when we first saw Kozilek, is the different art style on the card. And this is where we see the top banner with the casting cost, the name, creature Eldrazi. It has a text box, but the art basically bleeds through the sides of it, where there's not like a colored band around. Mm-hmm. And I want to know what you thought, as we well know now, these are not artifact creatures. These are just, I guess, colorless beings. Was this another way to kind of show us that this is not an artifact? This is a completely non-colored card, so it doesn't even have a border?
I think that's exactly what it has to do with it. I mean, like I mentioned a moment ago, the Eldrazi have essentially ascended any sense of color, so it's only appropriate that their card features no color other than the art itself on it.
And then kind of right related to this is we had all these rumors about having the spawn tokens, and we have our first card giving us a little bit of a preview of this. We have Corpse Hatch, 3/2 black, it's a sorcery uncommon, destroy target non-black creature. Yeah, you're already skeptical because you got a 5-mana sorcery that's drawing a non-black creature. And it says, put 2/0/1 colorless Eldrazi spawn creature tokens onto the battlefield. They have sacrifice this creature to get 1 mana or add 1 colorless mana to your mana pool. So, obviously they seem to be there designed to pump out our huge Eldrazi that we're expecting to see more of. But what are your thoughts, Jack, in kind of having these spawn tokens as a potential mana source?
I think they'll be interesting. I mean, you're still going to have these. I honestly do not think that they'll be used so much to cast Eldrazi as they'll be used to cast everything else in the game. They're obviously, you're going to have a card where it's like Sprout from Future Sight, where it just produces one. They'll have to be attached to spells that are probably a bit lower costing to get any real use out of them, and perhaps like excel you into the Eldrazi or other spells that would be of use. At this point, though, considering this is the only card we have, I can't say too much on them, but they'll definitely be interesting, especially if there's token producers, like mass token producers. It could lead to the rise of another token-based deck. Who knows?
Which has me very, very excited. And the other new keyword ability that we have that I, again, like as more the tribal player, we have Mammoth Umbra. It's 4/white, enchantment aura. I believe that is an uncommon again. This is enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +3/+3 and has vigilance and has totem armor, which I think is an interesting keyword. If enchanted creature would be destroyed, instead remove all damage from it and destroy this aura. Again, probably not constructed worthy, but again, it seems like an interesting limited card and a lot of fun and more kind of casual magic. And especially people were already talking about EDH with like Uriel the Mistalker. Potentially some big uses for this card.
Too often in like constructed and standard play, though, people try to measure every creature-based enchantment like it's Armadillo Cloak. This really is not that bad, and if there are other ones that have Totem Armor attached to them, I mean, folks, a pseudo Dauntless Escort is still a good idea if it's on your biggest guy. If you can keep that one guy from getting wrathed for a turn, that's not all that bad now, is it?
No, so this is something I think it got a little bit of a bum rap at first, as it is a 5 casting cost. Aura, but it seems when it's saving a creature, I like it. And wasn't there one called False Hope or something like that? It was again a really expensive 4/4 aura for white. I'm trying to remember the name of this one. It's going to kill me. Soaring Hope is the one I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, Soaring Hope actually was really bad.
Yeah, that's the one I think everybody when they saw that casting house, they thought of Soaring Hope. But no, this I think is much much better. So kind of give it a try. But you're right, I think this more is interesting to see, would this potentially be on a cheaper enchantment, cheaper aura, just to see what they do with this.
Yeah, I mean, the pomp and vigilance is nice, but at 5, meh. I mean, if for example, if it was on a black one, it was simply just +2/+2, or like has fear and is indestructible as long as this enchantment's attached to it. That's not that bad, really.
And last but not least, we have the Fire Boar. We have the Valakut Fire Boar. It's 4/red, creature elemental boar, because the only thing more scary than a boar is an elemental boar. Uncommon. Whenever this card attacks, switch its power and toughness until end of turn. As you can guess, it's a 1/7.
The only thing I ponder on this, though, with it being a elemental boar, is like, as it's burning, would it smell of bacon, ham?
I don't know, yeah, if it was made out of like real boar pieces, you think it would have a real boar smell.
Yeah, but I mean, it would also look strange having stamped on the side "all natural boar," though, Tom. It's charging at you.
That I would like to see. That's on the side of the box for license to drive. It's like 100% more Corey. Have you seen that movie?
License to Drive
with Corey Feldman and Corey Haim.
Didn't one of them die recently?
Corey Haim is now not of this planet anymore. And that's why I almost came close to like naming this podcast, like, Can I Zombify Corey Haim?
Oh, that would be... No, Tom, too soon, too soon.
I don't think it's too soon. We saw this coming. This is not a surprise. Everybody's just like, I wonder if it was a drug overdose. Of course it was a drug overdose. We've seen this guy on TV doing... I don't know, he's like smoking, you know, lava, you know, smoking out of a lava lamp. He was probably found basically like snorting a combination of kerosene and like unicorn tears like while he was naked on like a bucking bronco. Like, who knows what this guy was doing at the end?
Well, all I know is I went as Billy Mays for Halloween last year a couple months after he died, and that was still too soon. I didn't realize how many people I would offend wearing that outfit, but anyway.
I think we've all been mourning for Corey Haim for quite a while. Now it's just finally done.
So we're already past it.
Yes. And if anybody wants to see a really good performance of a solo Corey Haim, not when he's being supported by arguably the inferior Corey Feldman, is Prayer of the Roller Boys. It's tough to find. It's probably only on VHS. No, it's on DVD. I can get it through Netflix. This was kind of the, I believe, late 80s, early 90s when we were having a lot of the post-apocalyptic films. And this was the future where all the high schools have gotten so bad that they're just been taken over by gangs, where the government basically just walled off all the bad cities and just basically ignored them. They said, hey, you know, tough shit. Here you go. Good luck. Everybody's just a gang member now. And these are like the really tough 80s gangs, not like Bloods and Crips, or like the Black Hearts, where they
also instead of wearing bandanas, they wear mascara and leather.
Yeah, they had like a little Black Heart tattoo like on their upper cheek, like kind of like Marie Antoinette.
But I take it because it was the 80s, they were still sensitive there.
They were sensitive. So these are like the most pussy-whipped gangsters you're ever going to see in your life.
I'm going to cut you and then cry about it later.
But basically the government wants to reclaim these, so they've created like android teachers. They're like super robots, but now they're instructed to like instruct, but their programming gets mutated, so they actually just start killing the students. Because that's the only way to actually educate them is to kill them.
So it's kind of like regular high school, actually.
Yeah, there's another one called like Class of 2000 that has a sort of similar story to it, but I recommend checking that out.
Where do you find this crap, Tom? Oh my god.
I am a connoisseur, if you will. So people send me recommendations, and we have a few in the emails this week. But we have a few more Magic News things to talk about. And one of the other ones that people were pretty excited about was the Friday Night Magic April promo is Blood Braid Elf. People have been wanting this one for a long time. It's going to be rotating out not too long from now, but still you finally get a foil Blood Braid Elf with alternate art.
At least now they're printing the cards people want when they can still have time to use them, unlike, you know, last year when we got Murderous Red Cap and the Merfolk Lord and a couple of the other ones a month or two before Shadowmoor rotated out. At least they must be listening to us, Tom, because I remember complaining about that very thing 3 months ago.
They are listening to you, Jack. They listen to the show, I know that, because they talk about the love of oozes.
Ooh, that's actually frightening.
It is, yeah, because basically made me sound like a real crazy guy. Like, yeah, there's this really weird guy out there, likes ooze cards, don't know what's up with that. I'm like, that's me.
And then 5 minutes later you were like, that's an insulting tone, wait a minute.
But if they give me more ooze cards, I will take it. And the Wizards Play Network is sending out some thank you play mats that actually look really cool. It's kind of it's a World Wake themed play mat with an alternate picture of Jace with his face melting.
Actually, that's the art from Selective Memory, Tom. And it,
oh, really?
Yeah, that's probably actually the best thing about that card. But no, the art is amazing, blown up. Folks really should take a look at it, and we'll put it in the show notes.
Oh, yeah, we will definitely. Okay, well, there we go. Thank you. I would have gotten a lot of corrective emails if you had not corrected me there, so thank you.
See, I saved you from getting hate mail that I'll probably still get myself.
Yes. Oh, the gyroscope is back.
I'll put it away.
And it's like, it sounds like the world's largest mosquito every once in a while. Like, it just, the hair on the back of my neck stands up because I just imagine like getting anemic from that sound.
Okay, I'm clasping my hands together and putting it away.
Oh, you could, it's just that's what the sound reminds me of, is like a huge mosquito just ready to suck my blood.
Yeah, for the folks that don't know, I occasionally need things to fiddle with during the cast because I have ADD, apparently. So I'm messing with probably the most fun thing you can give your child, and that is a gyroscope.
Okay, I'm not even gonna, I'll say there's probably one extra thing that you're, yeah.
Ah-ha-ha, masturbation joke.
Yes, I was just trying to imagine, be like, you'd probably be really focused, though. But, we won't even go into some of the things I've seen in clinic. We won't even go into that.
The thing with the guy and the right stuff phone was enough for me.
Yeah, that, and there's a recent study that came out that 7% of adults actually have sexsomnia, where they perform sexual acts in their sleep.
That explains oh so much.
It does, actually. And this is my challenge. If you're an adult and have adult friends, ask them, have they ever did something like, you know, touch themselves or whatnot in their sleep, and you will get some yeses. Guaranteed.
All right. Here, we are trying to keep the podcast as clean as humanly possible at the request of a listener, so we'll drop it there, right?
Yeah, so let's move on to hand-drawn pictures of underage girls. And this is related to our... This actually came out a couple weeks ago. This is Magic Manga. So there's going to be... I am trying to pronounce the name of this magazine. There's a Dengeki Mao.
And basically, no, keep going. I'm loving this.
Dengeki Mao. And when they zoom in on the left-hand side, there's actually a picture of the of a Cunning Spark Mage promo. And on the inside, we actually have a new manga series for apparently for Magic. So this is the formal announcement. It's that Yoshino Himori is the artist. This came out on Saturday way back in February of 27th. It's based on the Planeswalker novel Purifying Fire, which an awesome listener sent me in a synopsis of. Thank you. And they have some of the pages that's obviously in Japanese. And manga, I don't know, do you read that, what, top to bottom?
It's actually right to left. The only thing that concerns me about them turning this into a manga is it's only a matter of time now before we have, like, Rule 34 going on Chandra Nalar, which, for those of you that get that, do not do it for any reason whatsoever.
Okay, I don't know what that is, but if I put that into Google, will I be sad?
Yes, it's kind of like typing in Beaver. You could get something you're actually looking for.
So my grandma would also be sad.
Yeah, just don't do it, Tom. Just don't do it.
Yeah, that's. Did you ever watch Tom Green at all?
Sadly, yes.
Did you see the one where he gave his grandma a box of vibrators and she didn't know what they were, and he had to and she was having her figure out what to do with these, so she didn't know what they were, and she was like, she actually was trying to beat eggs with these. Like, grandma, maybe it's an egg beater. Is it an egg beater, grandma? And she's actually got eggs and it's like, meh. She's like, this doesn't work very well.
I miss 90s humor some days.
To keep it on, so I hope everybody's still listening, we have our couple of big tournaments, and first, we mentioned this briefly, was Grand Prix, I cannot talk today, Grand Prix Kuala Lumpur. Thank you, I am having a tough time today. We want to say congratulations to Ding Liang. He actually won this with Red Deck Wins and made it through really three straight Jun matches to get the championship. So definitely want to say congratulations for making it through the Jun Swamp. And the other story that made some different news is that an 8-year-old at the same tournament made day 2. And I think that is really cool.
It's kind of like the 13-year-old girl that I believe won a legacy tournament 2 years ago and was playing Red Deck Wins.
Yeah, so what we know about this, and this was a historical footnote, is how this was from the StarkingtonPost.com. It's the first of its kind, an 8-year-old man to make second day of the competition. Kurt Porter is his name, and he was playing Jund. It was a pressure cooker for the youngster to make the cut, needing to win in the final round of day 1 to make it. It could be argued it is in Kurt's blood, as his father is James Porter, who won Grand Prix Manila in 2006.
Well, I've got to give the kid credit. I mean, after playing such a complex deck, I mean, that really says something that he made it.
So that's pretty cool. So I want to say congratulations to Kurt Porter. So that is
all fun. Joking aside, that is awesome.
Because I think when I was 8, I think I was busy typing in, trying to put in the entire Twins roster into Baseball Stars and the Nintendo.
Oh, that is old school. I was playing Castlevania and reading dirty comic books, probably.
Yeah. So I was like trying to figure out with 5 or 6 letters how to spell Kirby Puckett in a way that I'd remember. It'd be like K-R-B-Y-P-K. It'd be like, Kirby Puckett, okay, that's who that is.
No, there was an H in there somewhere, Tom. It was silent.
You know, I know my twins. And Al Newman, the all-time best utility infielder that's ever lived. The other big tournament that we had was we had a big Star City Games Open. And this was a big one. It was actually the biggest attended Star City Games Open that has existed yet.
Ooh.
Ooh, what do you think of that? So we pull up the thing here. It was held in Indianapolis. It was the biggest one. Both the standard and legacy portions were record breakers. So it wasn't just one or the other. It was both. James Bush, he won the standard portion. He was playing Jund. Oh, cry inside. And legacy was won by apparently Star City Games' own Chris Walterek. And he used a minor variation, or could be major. I I don't know my Legacy very well, on the 43 land deck. And he made the top 8. We'll have a link to the top 8 decks in the show notes. I don't know, Jack, are you playing any standard at all, like in your FNMs or any tournaments? We're getting a lot of feedback about people kind of calling it Jundered or are kind of getting sick of seeing Jund in standard.
Well, actually, speaking of Star City, and this is the perfect segue into that, people keep talking about how horribly broken Jund is and how it's this and it's that. And look, I'll say this, folks. Jund is very, very, very good and very, very, very easy to play and very synergistic. It is not unbeatable, though. And it bothers me when I get on Salvation and other places and I see the next 43 threads complaining about how Jund is broken and we need to ban Bloodbraid Elf and we need to ban this and we need to ban that. Stop complaining about it. The deck is not that incredibly difficult to beat. Eric put it valiantly last week when he said that the deck was probably popular due to both cost and ease of playing. When you have decks that you don't really have to think a great deal on, you're probably more likely to play them in a massive competition, right? Right. Speaking of which, there was actually a thread today where somebody was talking about banning Bloodbraid Elf. Gavin Varhey, one of our old co-hosts on
I think he's dead now. I don't know where he is.
No. He's still deep in the Varhey cave training every single day.
I've imagined like Steven Seagal in every movie he's been in where he's punching that board with the ropes wrapped around it.
No. Tom, that's a bad comparison. Gavin's way more cool than that. Anyways, though. Gavin has an excellent article on Star City Games, and it's not premium, so, you know, Joe Schmel can go read it, where he talks about what defines a powerful card and, to a lesser extent, what defines a powerful deck. Anybody that is complaining about Standard, I highly recommend you go there and read it.
Is this the Myth of Power article that we were talking about?
Yes. It's, you know, mad props to Gavin. The man has a way with writing articles and discussing Magic that I simply totally lack and I make up for with my bad jokes and sexual references.
What I do, just without the jokes. Purely sexual innuendo.
Oh, that's just me and you, man. We just pour that kind of energy right out of the tweet. And in your case, you might ooze it. But going back to the discussion, it sucks to see Jund so much, but it's not the end-all, be-all deck. It is definitely beatable.
Do you feel like, like you said, you know, it may be unfounded, but the overall view that Jund has taken over Standard. Do you have any inkling that's increased interest in Rise of the Eldrazi as potentially the way to kind of upset the balance of the current Standard, where people might be more excited for the set than they normally would just due to the Standard metagame right now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, people are looking for that new counterspell or that new hoser to come and just make the deck that much easier to put into the ground. It's kind of like when, I believe it was Zendikar was the last set, and forgive me, my mind has been soaked by college and work. The last set that came out gave Standard a healthy shot in the arm, and it gave a lot of other decks at least a chance via Jace and just other synergistic cards that make everything great, like Tectonic Edge, for example. But it didn't have enough to where it could successfully give Jund an even 50-50, or at least give all other decks at least an even matchup versus Jund. People are looking for some cure-all answer for anything that they play. The sad truth is, there's not really a cure-all answer out there yet, so folks are really hoping that's going to happen with Rise of the Eldrazi. It's definitely increased interest for the set, I think, but at the same time, it's a dual-edged sword because it's going to raise expectations for what's in that set.
Oh, good point. Yeah, when you're looking for potentially a, quote, solution to Standard, when you see an 11 casting cost, very cool, but arguably very high casting cost creature, might be like, not what I'm looking for, guys.
Yeah, and what's sad about that is you're going to have a lot of players who might not be so serious about the game, and they're going to look at it and say, oh, there's nothing there to cure Jund. But, folks, there might really be, so just keep your expectations realistic and maybe Jundurator won't be the menace it is right now, a couple of months from now, with that new common that they spoil, or that new uncommon.
And you kind of brought up the discussion of the word cancel and counter spells, and that's, I would say, a very controversial topic, especially for Standard. What's the correct casting cost? Where should a counter spell be? If you follow it all on Twitter, is Kenneth Nagel, he will often discuss what's going on in R&D regarding things like cancel and counter spells. He's obviously not telling you what the new cards will be, but he's always joking like, hey, I was told the best way to neuter is to make it 2 blue and 2 colorless, and he'll get, you know, 100 tweets back and say, oh, I guess that wasn't a very good idea. So it's kind of fun if you're kind of interested in sort of the kind of comical mindset of someone going through the R&D process. His Twitter feed is usually pretty entertaining.
Actually, for anybody following my Twitter, I've been off there recently because my computer was compromised by Twitter. They've been hacked recently a couple of times. So, anybody on there, if you're following me, I'm sorry. I'm still alive. I'm avoiding that website for the time being.
Okay. So apparently, I do it on my phone. So never mind. I might be safe.
Yeah, you're probably safe, but it's only a matter of time before viruses are for smartphones as well.
Don't tell me that.
It's just a matter of days, Tom. Slowly ticking away on the hourglass on your iPhone.
Now, any other magic news tidbits for you this week, Jack? And we kind of went over the main ones. We had some tournaments. Conley's working tonight, and I want to give everybody the reason he wasn't there last week. He was going to be there. He says, I'm playing in a vintage tournament starting at 11 in the morning. Unless something crazy happens, I will be there in time. Well, obviously something crazy happened. I'm not sure if he won one, but he did get, I think, a Mach Sapphire and like a Mishra's Workshop, so he must have done pretty well.
You know, I've got to give it to Conley. He plays things off extremely cool, because in his email he just kind of nonchalantly mentioned it. Oh yeah, I got a Sapphire. Well, all right then, Conley. Matt drops him.
That's a fun weekend in Vegas right there.
And I also picked up a Lamborghini. It was just at the convenience store. Yeah,
Countach or something like that? I don't know. I think it might be kind of good. I don't know. So that's our magic news. I'm pretty excited because we're officially getting the Rise of Eldrazi rumor mill officially rolling forward. And so far, I'd be impressed where I almost feel like the unofficial leaks from Wizards have almost completely dried up and stopped. Have you noticed that really, I would say, for Worldwake, all the cards we really got were officially spoiled cards?
Well, a couple of sets back, I don't remember if it was exactly Shadowmoor or Eventide, the entire set got spoiled almost 2 months before it came out. Mm-hmm. And to my understanding, there was actually a Wizards of the Coast or a Hasbro employee that was doing it, and I think they've kind of brought their hammer down on that kind of leaking, so to speak. So it will probably be a long time, if ever, before we get that kind of headway on the set.
And I have to admit, at first everybody got really angry that we might be losing this. Having gone through the Worldwake spoiler season, I can't say it's, to me, it really seemed that different going through it. We still got it parceled out. We still really knew the set a few days before the pre-release came out. I felt about the same, and if it keeps everybody happy, I'm fine with that.
That's fine with me, too. I mean, knowing the entire set a few days before the pre-release gives me time to be like, oh yeah, I'm so excited about this. Yay, I get to play with new cards. Knowing the set 3 months before it comes out, 2 months before it comes out, something like that, gives me plenty of time to proxy it up, play with it in my current decks, try it out in limited, and get everything in the know before I actually go play. And by then, it's boring, so I might not buy as much of the product, which is probably a good reason they clamped down on illegal leaks.
Yeah, and also I think allowed them to get a little more ammo for giving exclusive spoilers to things like, say, podcasts like us and other websites.
Yes, really, we like exclusive content, if anybody from Wizards of the Coast is listening.
Yes, and whenever they email me to ask me, do I want to keep being in the program, I say, oh yes, and then just put moan, you know, with a bunch of N's on the end of it.
We also like large checks.
Yeah, we get cash, jewels, anything that's easily fenced, I will happily take. So we will go on to listener emails. We'd love to get these. You can email me at pitimp@mtgcast.com. Jack, where should they be sending you and potential viruses?
Ladies, gentlemen, well, actually ladies specifically, send all new...
Or gentlemen with lady bits.
No. Despite Aerosmith's popularity, I don't want any dudes that look like a lady. Send all hate mail, tweets, pictures of goats, etc. to jack@mtgcast.com. I can't always guarantee y'all reply with haste, but I will reply to you.
I wish they would have used, instead of tweet, I wish it would have been queef. That sounds very similar to me.
We're just keep coming up with words that people really should not put in a search engine. Our young listeners are going to be pissed.
I thought queef was just another word for farting, like passing gas. Is that another?
I was confused because I thought it was a sexual fetish.
No. If you want to look up, put in blumpy. Put that one in and see what you get.
Let's Google
be
that.
Be warned.
Do I need to have my content advisory?
Yeah, you need one of those like little filters that goes to your screen where if like somebody walks by and they're not looking directly at the screen, it just looks, they can't see it. You probably want one of those on there.
Answer. Well, so far I just have a lot of very fat people.
Yeah, huh. I'll tell you after the show what that one means.
Okay.
So we'll go through our emails. We had a bunch of really good ones. Neil, he found a very interesting tidbit about Sorin on the main mothership site. In the last paragraph, it says, "One such commitment involves the plane of Zendikar. Long ago, Sorin cooperated with two other planeswalkers to complete a ritual that would alter Zendikar forever. The three agreed that the results of the ritual were ever to be disturbed. All three returned to Zendikar. Sorin held up his end of the agreement, but now he finds himself alone on the plane with no sign of his two buddies." And he had the question saying, he's seen this, we pretty strong rumors that there's going to be two planeswalkers in Rise of Eldrazi. Are we going to be seeing the two of them that are being described in this paragraph? I'm like, that's a pretty good find.
Well, I think we'll probably see, I believe it's Gideon that we mentioned last week.
Yep, and we had a, we'll get down to a little bit. We have a really good list. Let me go to it right now. We had somebody actually send in, basically they summarized that book, and they talk about Gideon. And so we had Doran, who actually just read The Purifying Fire and gave us some more info on Gideon. He says he's a white planeswalker that works for an order that apparently has power on multiple planes, but very little is revealed aside from that. He uses a weapon that's described as a multi-pronged whip or coil of metal that becomes almost fluid in his hands. Apparently in the book, he's first an obstacle for Chandra and later a romantic foil. A new term to Firecrotch. By the end, the differences in their philosophies, they're both strongly devoted to the philosophy of their colors, Chandra red, Gideon white, causes Gideon horror at something Chandra does that she is convinced was necessary. They part claiming to be enemies, but Gideon says they will meet again, though you aren't told how they would feel about each other at that time. Signs from that book and the Path of the Planeswalker graphic novel point to the book taking place only a short time before Rise of the Eldrazi. So I want to say thank you to Doran for reading the book and giving us
the station he probably works for is the Infinite Consortium, most likely.
Oh, good point. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, if they're this all-powerful organization that works on multiple planes, so he might very well be working for a Tesseract, so to speak. Maybe that would be their difference in philosophy. I don't know. I've not read the book.
I like that. Next, we have Nickar. He wanted to say he had some good luck buying some Jaces at $22 a piece and got some Tarmogoyfs at $3 a piece, but is sad that he missed out on Dark Depths for $4. And apparently he gave his friend a really hard time for not picking them up or for getting them, and now that friend is now giving him a hard time for being a chump. And I had to share my own personal card buying story. This, you had to take yourself way back to Unlimited. Shinders, all these different card stores, there were not really Magic singles at that point because Magic wasn't sure whether this game was to keep going, what was going on with it. So I wanted to get some more Moxes and I wanted to get another Lotus. So the only way to actually find cards at that time was I went to the shady classifieds ad in my local newspaper. Found a guy supposedly put selling Magic cards, and I then met him at a McDonald's because I didn't trust him to not, you know, basically rape me if I met him at my house. So I met him there, and I then bought a couple Moxes and a Lotus, I think a library. Oh, no, that wasn't out yet, so it was just the stuff from like Unlimited and Beta. A couple Moxes and a Lotus, and I had to say, I have to admit, everybody's going to be angry at me. I paid $15 for the Lotus and $10 for the different Moxes. And that was a lot of money then. That was a lot of money. Like, you're spending, like, $15, $20 like on one card? That was insane.
Now, the question is, did you keep them and sell them when they got outrageous?
I still have them. Like, I'm emotionally attached to these cards. I've been with these cards longer than my wife.
You lucky man, you.
I still have... What do you do with them? I don't know. I can't sell them. That would just feel... It'd be like selling my cat. That would just feel wrong.
I must admit, I kind of know how you feel. My dad bought a number one Iron Man because that was his favorite superhero, and he kind of has passed it on to me. And as much as that comic book is worth now due to the popularity of the Iron Man.
Good point. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, I can't give it away. Like, it's partially because it's my dad's, and partially because just, I don't know, like, I grew up reading comic books, so it kind of has a special meaning to me. And, you know, they're not going to make another number one Iron Man, obviously, so I don't know. I can't sell it. I can't bring myself to do it. Even with college tuition looming overhead, I just can't do it.
Are you a silver or golden age comic nut by any chance?
I'm a huge golden age comic nut. I don't have a lot of them.
We need to talk because I have a huge collection, actually.
I have a feeling that I could have hours of fun at your house for some reason.
Yes. So we will not deviate too long with the story of how I came across a big... I guess they'd mostly be Silver Age, because Golden Age is actually really old when you actually look into it. It's like 40s, right, is Golden Age, I think?
That was back before political correctness came in, and they would barefist slap Nazis.
Yeah, and they had like comics called The Yellow Kid, so you just got to watch that a little bit. So mostly Silver Age, but families from North Dakota, pretty much all ranchers. One side of my family actually was fairly well off, which some ranchers are. Actually, if you have a pretty successful ranch or a farm, those are actually fairly wealthy people in a lot of ways. They had one son that was completely spoiled. They bought him pretty much everything he wanted, which happened to be a lot of comic books. He has kind of moved on. He's actually like the black sheep. He's been involved in like different scams and whatnot. They eventually sold the ranch land, and there's this old, basically old storage hut in one corner of one of the sections of land. And they said the police department or the fire department is going to burn this thing down as practice. Whatever's in there, we got to get it out in the next, you know, like month. Whoever wants stuff out of there, we have no idea what's in there. Come get it. So I went out with my family because we lived in Minnesota. We were pretty close, and we went in, and there's these boxes of probably maybe 3,000 comics. Maybe I don't know. It was a lot. And I was the youngest boy. I was like 7 at that time, so I got all the comics.
You just have mad nerd luck, don't you?
Yes. So we got like the first Fantastic Fours and stuff like that, and just crazy stuff were in this collection.
Oh, you're making me sick, man. You got to stop. You have Lotuses and Golden Age.
Yes. Well, if I understand, that would still be Silver Age, right? For like the beginning of...
I'm trying to think. That's... If it's pre-World War II...
That's what probably that's what connotes okay or denotes.
Yeah, I think nobody quote me on that though. However, don't send me hate mail about getting my eras messed up.
Yeah. So yeah, and cool. I mean, and what actually I didn't know what they were really worth. So I read through a lot of the old like sci-fi comics, like Out of This World and Other Worlds and stuff. Those are by far the coolest comics ever.
Do you have any weird tales?
I have a couple of weird tales.
Oh, you're a lucky man then.
Those are weird. I mean, those are a little farther off the kilter, even those other sci-fi ones.
That was before the heavy-handed Comics Code Authority.
Yeah, like a lady's basically getting her clothes ripped off the front of that one. Here's like,
but that's what makes it so great, though. You have everything in it that a growing boy needs, Tom.
Yes, it was absolutely incredible. So we'll talk more, Jack, but I'm not going to bore our magic listeners. And next, we have Lynn D. He is a huge fan of EDH, had some concerns about becoming an officially sanctioned format, and wanted a kudos to Steve about his description of the Din Illuminatus, Pact of the Titan, and Altered Dimension combo that he described in the last show, because that was pretty epic. And he also brought up our discussion in the past of the bribery collusion discussion about the violation of the rules, and he said the easy solution to him is, if you're thinking about doing one of these splitting of the prizes and you wonder if it's kosher, just call a judge over and ask them what would happen if they were to offer that to their opponent. So you haven't made the bribery offer, so it shouldn't technically be illegal yet. Like, sounds like a good idea to me. If they say, no, that sounds dirty, say, okay, I won't do that.
Everything in theory is possible.
Yeah. Next, we have Nick S. Wrightson. He says there are rumors flying about the interwebs that Merit Lodge might be in the rise of Eldrazi. He said, based on some flavor text in both Eldrazi Monument and Dark Depths. And he wanted to know what Connolly thinks about this. Connolly's not here, so TS. He will be back here next week. He also wanted for me to formally present Dr. Woods with his PhD in awesome magic skills with a Z. So Conley is sadly working right now, but he should be back for our next episode, and for sure he'll be here for our episode 200. So Nick, we will put this one on the back burner and come back to it soon. Chris Otwell, he decided to basically tickle my B-movie love with some D&D movie info. So there's a D&D-like movie from 1982 called Mazes and Monsters starring one and only Tom Hanks. There are also two different D&D movies. There was Dungeons & Dragons, the movie, in 2000. Dungeons & Dragons, Wrath of the Dragon, in 2005. All of which I'm pretty sure are terrible.
They had paper mache dragons.
Terrible. I probably love it. Like I said, I watched the movie called Thanksgiving with a killer turkey. Probably enjoy this. Let's see. Duranius, he took a really close look at the Rise of the Eldrazi booster pack images and wanted to give us some of his thoughts. That he thinks we'll be seeing Sarkhan Vol and Garruk coming back as the two new planeswalkers. He says, on one of the packs, he feels you can clearly see Sarkhan Vol, which overall I think I agree. He's in the storyline for the webcomic. He also says, on the last package, I'll have the link in the show notes, there's a man riding a dragon. He looks really closely at him, and he says it looks like Garruk. And I have to agree. It does. You can see the helmet, the necklace, the belt buckle, and his tattoos. Overall, I agree. It looks like Garruk riding a dragon. Not sure why that would be. Can't guarantee it. But I have to agree with Duranius that looks like Garruk riding a dragon. So click a link in the show notes. It's actually the last booster pack image, and tell us what you think about that. Thank you again for Doran for sending us in the synopsis of Gideon from the book. Tosis has an awesome story about my Demolition Man movie recommendation from last week. Tosis said the first time he watched the movie was in German. And he was very confused why everybody kept talking about Taco Bell, because in the restaurant he said he only remembered there being Pizza Hut. Turns out he actually was right. When this movie was redubbed in German, Taco Bell was not in Europe yet. So they went through and replaced every mention of Taco Bell with the word Pizza Hut, and also replaced every image of Taco Bell with the image for Pizza Hut.
Huh.
And I actually went and verified this online, and he is correct. I had never known that until he sent me this email. I thought that was amazing. And he also says that there will soon come a revolution in sanitation, and then everyone will know how to use the three seashells, which is a lot.
It's coming one day.
It is. Next, we have Peter R. reminds me and a listener from last week that you can't take her Kozilek. No way, no how. And his, do we have any thoughts on the effect of draft with potentially large amounts of very playable, very powerful, colorless spells? My question is, I wasn't playing a whole lot of draft back in Mirrodin, but I assume it'd be somewhat similar to Mirrodin block, when you had a whole boatload of good artifacts.
Yeah, we'll go with that. I mean, if they somehow, some way have a token producer, like I was talking about earlier, or the spawn tokens, and you can still sack them for colorless mana, I see those being extremely popular. I mean, everybody's going to be grabbing that corpse hatcher or corpse snatcher or whatever you want to call it.
Corpse snatcher.
As much as they can in draft.
Corpse snatcher.
Yeah, corpse snatcher and that corpse hatcher. Yeah, anyways. But I see that card being immensely popular if it's not the only of its kind. But other than that, who knows? We have 7 cards total.
And next we have an email from Will S. He wanted to, quote, set me straight on some of the shady discussions of the true background story for the potential different card back for Arabian Nights. And wanted to give, he actually sent some links from an official article on the Wizard of the Coast site about what the true story for this was. So I will share it. So it says, this was back from Monday, August 5th, 2002. Arabian Nights almost had a completely different card back. But an 11th-hour change of heart, partially due to player protests, and a last-minute phone call ensured Magic's first expansion had identical card backs to the base game. And the cool link, if you actually look at the first link in the show notes for this, is actually show what the back would have looked like for the Arabian Nights cards. It actually looks really cool. And
but we'll never know.
Yeah, and this was the, you know, initially they thought that Magic was going to, each expansion would be its own separate thing. And the second link in the show notes goes through a much more detailed explanation of this. But initially, if this was going to be a playable own expansion, it would have to have the basic lands, kind of like Eric was talking about last week. And this just confirms what Eric was talking about. They removed the cards off the basic lands off the printing sheet once they didn't decide not to have the different card backs, but the mountain got left on, and that's why there's Arabian Nights Mountain. So it's definitely worth reading more about this. I have a link in the show notes. Take a look through. The second one has a very detailed story about this. But want to say thank you to Will. You are right. I wanted to give the official right story for this. So there you go. Next, we have an email from Clancy, lives in St. Louis. Went to a high school with a guy named Thorne that wrote in last week. He wanted to write in. He actually watched the movie Thanksgiving about a month ago, and he wanted to say it's the worst movie of all time. But very simply, he felt it odd that I didn't mention that, and this is true, the first thing you see in the movie is she appears to be a pilgrim. It's supposed to be back in the pilgrim times, but her shirt has been ripped off of her upper torso, therefore exposing her mammary glands. And that's how the movie starts. He said, this actually made me watch the movie, but I'm sad to say that I can never unsee Thanksgiving. It will be with me for the rest of my life, seeing it, and this movie is just fabulous. Seeing a turkey wearing a guy's face and having his daughter think it was actually him just makes me want to blow my brains out.
It says a lot about the mammary glands then, doesn't it?
Yes. They were large. Next, we have Mike B. from Connecticut. He said he narrowly missed on getting some cheap Tarmogoyfs, but he did get some very nicely priced Vampire Nocturnuses. Nocturni? Not sure the plural on that one. He also said Demolition Man is a great movie, plus it did feature a very good Dennis Leary cameo. Basically kind of doing his own stand-up, but pretending to be a guerrilla underground leader. Zach writes in, he grew up in Berkeley, California, and he says that there in the 80s and early 90s, every officer had Topps baseball cards of themselves, and any canine unit had some of the dogs, so I was not making this up. I thought I had truly confabulated part of my childhood. So I was bringing this up, people are like, I don't remember that, Tom. Are you sure about that? I'm like, yes. I remember these cards. They said he remembered that they had stats like arrests, and he thought this was pretty cool when he was 6 years old. Travis L., he sent in a link from one of the Joes from YoMGG Taps. Their blog is Affinity for Islands, and they have this very nice blog article about World Wake playtest cards from the Magic Cruise with actual images of the playtest cards. If you're into that kind of thing, make sure to check out that link. Chris N., he sends me in a B-movie recommendation. He says, one of the greatest B-movies ever made was Hawk the Slayer. It's an old sword and sorcery movie starring the, just apparently a terrible job by Jack Palance as a character named Voltan, an evil wizard bent on taking over the world. His brother Hawk and his band of followers must team up to stop Voltan at all costs. He has a link to the YouTube video of the trailer for this movie. It looks abysmal. And I'm going to try to find
it. Sounds delightfully generic.
Yeah, Jack Palance with this like helmet that like covers up one of his eyes, and he keeps trying to like look out the other eye. It looks phenomenal. So thank.
Oh wow!
So the link to the YouTube trailer is in the show notes. If you have about 3 minutes, it's worth watching.
It really says something about the quality of these films when I go to torrent or peer to peer download them, not illegally download them, peer to peer sharing. It's different, not illegal. And I cannot find them at all whatsoever, Tom. That really does say something.
Yeah, I have to search. Thanksgiving, luckily, is on streaming right now. So if you want to watch that one, get your fix. I had one of my friends, he basically said the same thing that, I'm trying to remember here, who's the one that could not unsee the movie? That was Clancy. He had the same thing where he's just like, I'll never be able to forget this movie. It's just that bad. Because like, when they were writing this movie, they came up with this really good like burn line. I think they forgot they used it like 4 times. You're like, yeah, didn't we just hear this line like 3 minutes ago? And they keep saying this one girl is kind of a slutty character in Thanksgiving, and they keep saying her legs are tougher to close than the JonBenet Ramsey case. They say it like 5 times.
Oh, that's just wrong.
It was very wrong. So they kept saying it over and over again. Clearly they meant to edit it out, but they forgot. Last.
Oh, that's delightfully
it terrible. Is. You really should watch it. Last but not least, we have MTG Cast News. Pretty light. Things are actually going pretty well on the site. Things are striking forward. We might be having another new sponsor. Things are in the talk. Potentially working on a little bit of a new look for the website to make it a little less dark. I tend to like white-themed websites where it's usually black text on white background. Personal preference, I just think it's easier to read. Obviously, if you go to mtgcast.com right now, it's pretty much the exact opposite of that. So I'm potentially looking at a little bit of a different look. Same functionality, but slightly different look. And also, we started this World Wake, the second World Wake booster box giveaway. And I like movie things. I want to have a movie themed. I think it's a little too restrictive, so we're going to open it up. So what we're going to change, and everybody that's already entered with Marlon Wayans, you can re-enter or keep Marlon Wayans because he's fantastic, is the contest is going to be 12 prize packs of 3 World Wake boosters apiece. This is in the upcoming, potentially, Planeswalker Magic movie. Pick a Planeswalker, and then pick the actor or actress you would like to play that character and why. So we're going to open this up so you can get a little bit more creative. It doesn't have to be just Marlon Wayans, but pick any Planeswalker, then any actor or actress, and tell me why. Post either in the comments or in the MTG Cast thread that's in the show notes.
I think my favorite suggestion for a Planeswalker so far is Beyonce Knowles is Liliana Vest. I can definitely get behind that, all the way behind.
I'm gonna take that in a very dirty way, just because that's sort of the theme of tonight.
Oh, if I didn't like Jay-Z so much, I would definitely try to seduce her as much as I could.
Jay-Z, you are a lucky man. And also, I've just been sending out the prizes from our last booster pack giveaway. And again, I'm amazed by the international flavor of MTG Cast listeners. I would say a majority of them went to listeners in the United States, but I also sent packages, and I haven't heard from all the winners yet, to Australia, Croatia, Portugal, and a couple other countries.
The game really does bring people together. That's one of the reasons I actually enjoy it so much.
I thought that was absolutely amazing. And so I want to say kudos to our international listeners. How you ever stumbled onto this podcast just boggles my mind. I guess Google has kind of normalized everything, but again, thank you for listening. I thought that was very cool to say, can you mail this to Portugal? It's like, hell yes, I can. If I can write it on the envelope, it's going to get there.
By gosh.
By gosh. And Jack, that's all I got. Do you have any last little news bits before we say adios?
I would like to add something to the listener emails very briefly. Midways through this last week, I got an email from a gentleman called Manwiller, and it literally said something along the lines of, you can't have a set and goats what, and he enclosed
Oh,
like,
you forwarded that to me. Oh,
it was so great. and he enclosed like 12 different pictures.
I still have it in my email. It was fantastic. You got that just completely out of the blue?
Yes. He described himself as a 17-year-old gentleman, and he just loved the cast, and he decided to send me pictures of goats. And I must say, that really made my day, because when I was younger, I actually grew up on a farm, and one of my favorite animals were baby goats. So that really made my day and made me smile. So thank you, Mr. Manwiller, for that.
Oh, I was going to bring that up. Thank you very much. Yeah, all it said was, biatches don't know about my goats. And it says, you can have both. What? It just has pictures of goats.
Oh, and it was great. And see, the reason I like baby goats much more than mature ones is something most people don't know about goats probably. When they're in heat, the male goats will piss on themselves. And it's not very attractive. Like, they think it drives the females wild, probably like a couple of guys I know personally. But no, it doesn't. It just, you have a whole herd that smells like piss and suddenly you want to run away. So the baby goats definitely warmed my heart.
So, yes. to Mr. Manwiller, I wanted to say that was probably what I... Thank you, Jack. I would have felt terrible if I didn't mention this email. It was... I looked at this at work. I'm just like, what is this? I was like, bitches don't know about my goats? I'm like, uh-oh. I'm like, I'm going to take the gamble and open this at work. And phenomenal.
probably one of the better emails I've received while I've been podcasting on.
Yeah, so actually, I have the email address. So Mr. Manwiller, send me an email. I will send you something. I will find something in my room magic-related and send to you, because that was... Because it took effort. He attached a whole lot of goat... I mean, there's goat magic cards, goat tokens, pictures of actual physical goats, baby goats.
A random Asian guy.
Yeah, wearing sunglasses. I'm not sure what's up with that. Yes, so yeah. Thank you, Jack. That would have been a huge miss. That may be the name of the podcast. It's like, Girls Don't Know About My Goats. That may be the name of the podcast.
Yeah, because if we do biatches, the great email will turn into tons of hate mail. So yeah, let's make it Girls Don't Know About My Goats.
Yeah, so there you go, Mr. Manwiller. You are the title of this podcast. Thank you, Jack.
Well, that's all I got, Tom. What about you?
That's also all I got. Again, I apologize. It's only two of us. I was gone this weekend because I was doing the boxing matches. We will share stories of boxing matches in the future. Most of the weird stuff that happens at boxing matches is not actually in the ring. It's what the people watching the game are doing to each other.
Well, see, folks, what Tom was trying to say is he owned everybody's ass at the boxing match, but he's being humble.
Yeah.
And doesn't want anybody to realize his pugilist power.
Well, it was frightening. Before I lost a lot of weight, I was definitely a bigger guy, and I was watching the boxing matches, and I saw like who was in my weight class. I'm like, oh my good God. This person could rip off my leg and beat me to death with it, and he's the same weight as I am. I'm like, there is a problem with me.
Well, now, was it like the actual Mike Tyson or more along the Simpsons Mike Tyson kind of fellow?
This was more along the real Mike Tyson sort of fellow. So,
yeah, because he's way more frightening in real life.
So all I know about Golden Gloves boxing is because I have to show up to the tournaments, is that normally people are matched very closely by their age, weight, and also just kind of their overall records. They have this very bizarre system to do this. So it's just to make it so matches are even and somebody's not getting pummeled too badly. But once you get over 200 pounds, all the rules go out the window. You are officially called a super heavyweight, and they don't give a shit anymore. You can be 200.5 pounds versus a guy that weighs 290 and just basically got off the train from like Transylvania. So and when you're the ring doctor, these matches scare you to death. Because these guys just come out swinging for the fences, and they basically could knock each other's heads off.
And in the ring tonight, we have Pencil Nut Jones versus the Wolfman.
He's just like, no!
Let's get ready to rumble.
Like, no! No! oh man! And then usually there's families always come to watch. So there's people just yelling and kill him, kill him.
And they were all yelling that at Tom. You're quite ferocious, actually.
Oh, yeah. Like, if you had to end up calling a fight, like, call it early because someone's getting, beat up too badly, they don't like you anymore.
So did you have to hold anybody back?
No, I did have to hunt someone down who ran out of the ring because he got knocked down, he got really angry, and then just escaped the ring. Like, he, like, ran under the ropes and, like, tried to leave the building. And I had to...
Oh, that sounds like a bad WWE move.
Yeah, I had to go find him because, like, I technically have to assess him to make sure he's, in the process of dying. And he's like, he's just yelling at me, you get the F away from me. And fortunately, the coaches know that if they're mean to me, I can put something in the book that doesn't let them box for 3 months. So like, hey, so they, you should probably answer his questions. I just want to know to make sure you're not dying. Otherwise, you can be an a-hole. That's fine with me. Just let me look in your eyes.
Oh, boy. That sounds like you had a great time.
It's always very interesting. And then one guy actually fell out of the ring during a match. Like, he wasn't a very good boxer, and he would just kind of seem like... It was almost like doing the bald bull head charge at people. But in real life, you just step out of the way. It's not a very effective strategy. And then he actually tripped and basically skidded along the ring floor and then through under the ropes onto my table and, like, crushed my table.
Oh. Delivered right at your feet?
Yeah, it was impressive. You're just like, what the...
Gravity's got broke again. Yeah. Oh, no.
He lost a point for that maneuver.
Well, apparently it wasn't the Olympics, and nor were they doing freestyle head skiing.
You know? No. So I will share more boxing stories in the future. That is just a couple of them. Thank you for listening, Jack. Thank you very much for joining me for an earlier recording. It's much, much easier on me to do it this way.
Tom, anytime we jam together, it's always a pleasure.
And girls, don't forget about my goats.
Girls don't know nothing about
goats.
My goats.
Oh,
my goats, my lovely,
lovely, lovely lady goats.
Oh, good night, everybody.
See ya.